Hello, friends, and thank you for joining us in what we're calling a conspiracy of goodness, singing the songs and telling the stories of people from across the world, but mostly in our communities, Larry Long, recording the songs and stories and sounds of our communities and our friends, Brett Hughes. I'm Tom Thibodeau, and this morning we are celebrating moments in time that we measure our lives by.
I grew up in turbulent times, in the class of 69. Dr. King and JFK were taken in their prime. Air so thick with prejudice, could slice it with a knife. From Kimberly Rose to George P. Floyd, when will we get things right? White guys in pickup trucks, the neighborhood in fear. Driving by with rifle racks, what are they doing here? My father died when I was young, with three kids to raise. Mother sheltered us from the storm through the love she gave. My mother would say, when the door opens, walk on through. My mother would say, always walk a mile in someone's shoes. Walk on through.
When Robert Greenleaf was asked to give a definition of a servant leader, he said, look at a good mother. Isn't it amazing how strong a mother's love is, how formative it is? I work with people across the country in developing leadership, and one of the questions I ask is this. What are three core virtues or values that you would not compromise, and how do you talk about those in a story? And here's my story. When I was 12, I became an adult, because when I was 12, my mother was pregnant with my youngest sister. Her bed was brought down to our family room, and from that family room, she taught me how to cook and clean and iron and sew. Well, she gave birth to my youngest sister and then went into deep postpartum depression. I dropped out of school in the sixth grade, and I cooked, to cleaned, to ironed, I sewed, but a 12-year-old boy can't care for a family. My father had to rely on members of our community to take us in. There was no foster care at that time. We had no relatives in Wisconsin Rapids. So we all went to live with different families. And I lived with a family, and the boy in the family was in seventh grade and was not on good terms with his father. And his father would come up at night and yell at him, and I felt like I was getting yelled at too. Felt so all alone. And one night, lying in bed, I looked out at the moon, bright moon, stars, and I just began to pray, God, please take care of my mom. Please take care of my dad. Please, God, bring our family back together. And in that moment, I felt this incredible sense of peace. At 12, I became a person of prayer. 2 weeks later, I'm with my dad, and we're driving. I said, who's taking care of mom? And he said, well, psychologist and psychiatrist. And I said, what do you have to do to become a psychologist or a psychiatrist? Well, you have to get a degree in psychology and then maybe a master's degree in counseling. And if you want to be a psychiatrist, you have to go on to medical school. At 12 years of age, I decided I wanted to serve. I wanted to help take care of people who suffered, like my mom. And then my mom came home after 13 weeks of being in hospital, and our family was gathered again together, but she was weak. It was difficult. And yet, I don't know what happened, but every night there'd be a casserole. People understood that this woman with six small children didn't have the strength to make dinner every night. And for the next 2 or 3 months, there was always food on Monday through Friday, and we were literally fed by the community. Prayer, service, community are the foundation of my lives, given to me by my mother. I will never be the same.
Don't know what we could have done to have made it through without the help of the government and good neighbors just like you. With the war still raging, I knew I could not go take the life of someone else after I left home. My mother would say, when the door opens, walk on through. My mother would say, always walk a mile in someone's shoes. Walk on through. From Standing Rock in a pickup bed into a paddy wagon with nuns, from a farmer's tractorcade onto a freedom run. Travel destroys prejudice, my calling I had found. To injustice I object, standing on sacred ground. Can you hear that freedom sound? My mother would say, when the door opens, walk on through. My mother would say, always walk a mile in someone's shoes. Walk on through.
When my dad was 70, he went back to college, took a class in memories and memoirs. There were 9 people in the class, and of course, he was the oldest student. And the teacher said, whatever you choose to do, I'm going to hold you to it. And he said he wanted to write a book. Have you ever written a book, Mr. Thibodeau? No, never written a book. Have you ever read an essay? No, man, never written an essay. How about a short story? No, never written a short story. And she said, and you want to write a book? He said, yes. He said, but I'll need help. And she said, I'm here to help you, but I'm going to hold you to it. He says, that's why I took the class. And so she had different writing assignments that they had to participate in. And here's this man who practiced a lifetime of writing legal briefs, now learning to write about his own experience. And here was one of his assignments that I have in my hand. Decisions, right or wrong. And my dad writes, if I had known what I know now, I would never have gone to law school in the late 1940s. My younger days seemed to be pointing me in the direction of teaching and coaching football. The people who influenced my life cared little about my choices and convinced me otherwise. As the years passed, the opportunity presented itself to taste the sweet fruit of coaching young men, and I found that what I had expected was true, and it was sweet indeed. But by then, the die had been cast. 5 children made it impossible to shift professions, so 8 years had to suffice. Teaching, too, became a reality, although only 3 hours a week, but it was great and lasted 19 years. My supervisor said, change this grade from an incomplete to a C. I said no, and he said goodbye. But the exposure was enough to confirm for me what I thought I knew and what I now know should have been. Carl Jung says, all of us live out the unlived lives of our parents. My dad wanted to be a teacher and a coach. My first job out of college, I was coaching Native young men in Canada, and I've been teaching now for the last 40 years. Thank you, Dad, for giving me a life of meaning, purpose, and joy.
No one can defeat us, nor tear us apart. When we surround hatred with love, the jewel lives within our hearts. Those who have the least often have the most to give. Thank you for all you do. Be kind to all that live. All that we have is what we give. My mother would say, when the door opens, walk on through. My mother would say, always walk a mile in someone's shoes. Walk on through. These are things that are sacred. They cannot be sold. They cannot be bought. More priceless than silver and gold. This I know. My mother would say, when the door opens, walk on through. My mother would say, always walk a mile in someone's shoes. Walk on through.
I love this time of year. The fall, the leaves, football, children playing, apple cider. Right now, I have a gallon of fresh, crushed apple cider in my refrigerator, and I'll go to the refrigerator and I'll take it out. But before I pour it, what do? I shake it up. Why? Because all the good stuff is on the bottom. And every once in a while, to get the good stuff, you gotta get all shook up. Well, I tell you, about 15 years ago, I'm in Appleton, Wisconsin, and I'm giving a presentation to alumni of Viterbo, explaining all the good stuff happening in our campus. But now it's 8 o'clock at night. All I've had to eat are hors d'oeuvres. I have to go to Fond du Lac the next day, and I'm walking to the lobby of the Paper Valley Inn, and I bump into this gentleman. I look at him, Mark, Tom, it's my brother Mark. He's a year younger than I am. He's the district attorney of Adams County. And I said, what are you doing here? He said, I'm here for the state DA convention. He said, what are you doing here? I said, I'm giving a talk for Viterbo. I said, what are you doing now? He said, I'm going to Subway and get a sandwich. I said, we're old enough. Let's go to the tavern. So we went in, we sat down, we had a beverage, and we had a sandwich. He said, where are you staying tonight? I said, I don't have a place to stay. Why don't you stay with me? He said, I got a king-size bed. The state's already paid for it. He said, oh, I have to sleep with me. I said, not a problem. So I went and got my stuff, came back up to his room. It was time to go to bed, so we both got up and took our medication. It's that time of life. We jumped in bed with each other, and pretty soon we're laughing, we're snorting, just like 12 and 11-year-old boys do. Because the last time we slept in the same bed with each other, we're 12 and 11. And then in the dark of the night, my brother started talking about our grandmother, Florence, an incredible woman. Her husband was killed in 1937, leaving her with five children under the age of 12. Our grandma was a single-parent businesswoman in the midst of the Great Depression. She had an apartment in Milwaukee, and she'd get up in the morning, and she'd feed the older four and give them the care of the 11-year-old, and then take her baby down to the shop where she began cutting hair. At 10 o'clock, she'd nurse her baby. But there was a friend of hers who had twins who brought the twins over, and my grandma nursed three babies at 10, at noon, at 3, and 5, and then went upstairs and took care of her children. When we were growing up, my grandma would come and help my mother, who was not very strong, and my grandmother would do sewing and cleaning and organizing, things my mother was not capable of doing, and at 5 o'clock at night, she'd go and get herself cleaned up and came down for supper, and then taught us how to make a brandy old-fashioned sweet. And then she taught us how to play sheephead and gave us good cards because she wanted the best for us. When my brother went to law school, he lived with grandma, and he'd come home at 11 o'clock at night on the bus, and there'd be a plate of food warming in the oven. We talked about our mom and our dad. Dad's been dead now for 25 years. Mom's been gone for 19. We talked about our uncles and our aunts and our cousins growing up in Milwaukee. We talked about our brothers and sisters. We talked about our wives. We talked about our children and now our grandchildren. We talked about our friends and the good work we've been given to do for the last 50 years. And in the dark of the night, we were reminded that we'd been loved for a lifetime. Love for a lifetime. Good stuff. And every once in a while, you got to get all shook up so you can taste it.
You know, in a few weeks' time, I'm going to be turning 70 years of age. And as I shared that with a friend, he said, you're not getting old, you are old. You know, my life work, as you know, has been Elder Wisdom Children's Song, and I've been bringing elders into the classroom, and they share their life stories with children that they in turn honor these elders in song. And through that process, I've honored over 1,000 elders all across the United States. I pretty much went into somewhat semi-retirement from that work a few years back, but I got a phone call, Tom, this summer from the St. Louis Park School District, a suburb of Minneapolis, where I went to school and graduated. And they asked me would I be willing to facilitate workshops with teachers so they could learn my process, so this process could be incorporated throughout the St. Louis Park School District. I was overwhelmed by that opportunity, and I said, sure, I'll do that. So facilitated 3 workshops this fall with teachers, but at the first workshop, I was asked to be the elder, to give my life story to these teachers who in turn wrote a song in honor of my life, and that was the song I just sang for you. It was the song written by 12 school teachers in St. Louis Park. And what was truly overwhelming about the process was that the workshops were held in a building called Lenox Community School, in the same building that I went to elementary school in. And the room in which I shared my life story, there was once a wall that now has been knocked down with these large plate glass windows, and from where I was seated, I could see the house I grew up in, only one block from there. I could see the tree that my father planted that's now 60 foot tall, and it's the home that my mother raised us 3 kids in after my father passed away when I was only 12. You know, I was born in Des Moines, Iowa, and my family was Southern Baptist, and I was raised in the arms of the Jewish community there in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. I attended dozens of bar mitzvahs and bat mitzvahs of friends who had completed their Hebrew studies when they turned 13. Always after a bar mitzvah and a bat mitzvah, there was great jubilation, and there was always a party that followed with classmates dancing in the basements of their parents' homes. I had a crush on one of those girls, went to her home, and then got chased off her doorstep by her grandmother for not being Jewish. When I told my mom about it, she said, I can't imagine what that girl's grandmother must have gone through in World War II because she was Jewish. It's always good to listen to the stories of others and to walk a mile in their shoes. Don't feel bad, son. It wasn't about you. My father was raised in one of those inner-city communities of white flight in West Des Moines. The Longs were the last remaining white family in what became an all-black neighborhood. My father's memories of his dad weren't good. When Grandpa Long drank, he got mean. And when Grandpa got mean, he'd take it out on Grandma and their 5 kids. My father never drank, but he did pick up the N-word from his dad, my grandfather. And when my father would use that word around the house, Mom would take us kids aside and say, your father might use that word, but we don't. Mom raises to believe that we're here for a purpose. It's up to us to find out what that purpose is. My mother and I shared a very deep intuitive connection. Whenever I called her from the road, Mom would say, Larry, I was just thinking about you. Mom's favorite hymn was, His eyes are on the sparrow, so therefore he must be watching me. On her final days in hospice, the sparrows gathered outside her window singing. Here's a song I wrote for my mom before she passed and was able to sing it for her. On piano is my good friend Ricky Peterson.
On the day that I was born, on the day I'm with you now. Through these times that seem forlorn, standing on ancestral ground. You were there when I first spoke. You were there when I first stood. You are there to give me hope. You are there in all that's good. If I were to save the world, who on earth would save me? If not for you, then who am I? If not for you, what would life mean? You're the breath inside the song. You're the note that lends an ear. You're the prayer that gives me calm. You free this heart from fear. Now here I am, the wheel has turned, holding you in my arms. Now here I am, the candle burns, listening to you gently call. Whenever I in need of friend, you are there to help me through. With a love that never ends, now here I am, I'm here for you. With a love that never ends, now here I am, I'm here for you.
Larry, that was absolutely beautiful, profound, and sacred. Thank you for sharing your mother's love with all of us.
And Tom, thank you for sharing stories of your father and your mother. As that song that was given to me, some things are sacred and they cannot be sold. They cannot be bought, more precious and priceless than silver and gold. And in these hard times that we're all facing, it's good for us all to ask ourselves, what is it in our life that is sacred that cannot be sold? And with that, to lean upon that, to give you strength through difficult times. Have yourself a great week, and thank you for all that you do.
Continue to celebrate moments of love and joy until we meet again. Peace and all good.
You have been listening to Conspiracy of Goodness with Larry Long and Tom Thibodeau, produced and recorded by Brett Hoos. For more information about Larry and Tom, please visit www.larrylong.org and www.tomttalks.com. We look forward to being with you next week. Thank you for listening.